the podcast that brings you one guest, one question, one answer. Business insights in minutes, not hours, with your host, the small business and franchise expert, Gary Occhio Grosso.
Good morning again, and welcome to another edition of Mastermind Minutes. My name is Gary Occhio Grosso. I'm the founder and managing partner here at Franchise Growth Solutions. You can click on our website, which is listed above or below this webcast podcast, to find out what we do. For those of you who are joining us for the very first time, Mastermind Minutes is a podcast designed to give you some insights and answer one question with one guest in minutes, not hours. We understand and say every week that we realize that's pretty much a tease, and we will always give you the contact information of the guests so you can contact them directly if you have additional questions or want to know more about their services. And today, my returning guest, I think Michael holds the record. This is the third time you're on the
program. Nice.
is Michael Iannuzzi. And as many of you know, in the franchising business, Michael is partner and co-leader of Citrin Cooperman's franchise practice, providing audit and accounting, business consulting, and advisory to franchisors. He also supplies tax planning services to a wide spectrum of clients, all within the franchise community. He works with franchisors and multi-unit franchisees in a variety of industries, including but not limited to fitness and athletic centers and children's entertainment, as well as recreational youth programs. He is involved in many, many things. I'll let him tell us about it as we go along. Michael, thank you for being with us again. We have a really important topic to talk about. And that is for franchisors. Yes. And in layman's term, a few years ago, the accounting world or the government, whoever controls this stuff, changed the way franchisors are allowed to report how they take in and collect franchise fees and how it hits their balance sheet and how it hits their P&L. So now I understand there's another change. It's like went one way. Now the pendulum's gone the other way. Michael, for the sake of our audience and me, why don't we start like at the beginning and kind of talk us through this entire revenue reporting situation?
All right, well done, Gary. Thank you again so much for having me. I think you do a great job with these, and it's nice to see everybody getting the views. And the topic of having like a one question, 10, 15 minutes, I think is great. So yeah, I'm gonna give a little bit of the history of kind of where we were, what happened at 12/31/19, what happened in the summer in June of 20, and where we're at right now. And I know we're in the middle of audit and FDD registration season, and people are getting ready to finalize audits and issue their FDD. So the topic is timely. And the changes that I'm going to talk about just went live about 3 weeks ago. So it's not like this has been floating around forever. This just became live. So here we go. Prior to 12/31/19, when a franchisor collected a franchise fee, the down and dirty rule was you collected that fee, you got the unit open. At the time you got the unit open, you took that, let's say it's $50,000, you took that $50,000 franchise fee and you recognized it as income on your P&L when the unit opened. That was a down and dirty rule, pretty easy to follow, although I saw many people not do that correctly. There was a very big project that the Financial Accounting Standards Board were working on for years to simplify revenue recognition as a whole for all industries, not just franchising, for all industries combined. And all industries were going to follow this criteria. Franchising, unfortunately, kind of got hit in there, where what the new rule said for 12/31/19 was that same transaction, take the $50,000 franchise fee. You have to look at some components of that sale. And again, down and dirty, take that $50,000. Instead of taking it into income when it opens, you're going to take the $50,000 and divide it by the life of the franchise agreement. And now instead of $50,000 on day one, you have $5,000 a year. So $45,000 sits on the balance sheet, liability, $5,000 gets picked up, and you go from there. So when that came out, the International Franchise Association, our firm, a couple other firms said, wait a second, franchisors have a lot of cost to get this franchise off the ground, they should be entitled to pick up some revenue up front. So what happened was, again, this is 12/31/19. Oh, and I should clarify, this is, we're talking about non-public franchisors. That's who we're talking about here, not the public sector,
right.
non-public. So they said, okay, let's look at the, maybe it's the cost incurred, the value incurred. What are you delivering to the franchisee when you sell them this unit? So again, down and dirty, it was determined that anything that was not related to the license, to the intellectual property, there was an opportunity at 12/31/19 to pick up some revenue. So using non-brand training, maybe teaching somebody how to read a P&L, QuickBooks training, things like that, that could be used in any business, not just brand specific, and we all know franchising is about the brand, you can pick up some revenue up front. So using that same example as before, you took the 50,000, maybe you pick something up front, you know, 5,000-6,000, and now you amortize the rest. I know it's a little confusing, but that's the rule at 19. In the summer, when the pandemic hit, the FASB, the accounting board, came out and said, okay, if you did not issue a financial statement for 12/31/19, as of this date, which was a date in June, forget the rules. You can use the old rules.
So, I caught me there. I know. First of all, the first chunk of your explanation for me was always the way to do it. You know, you open the restaurant, you fulfilled kind of your obligations of your right. franchise agreement. Your ongoing obligations were basically royalty driven, and that's what you got paid your royalties for. So I got it. Now, I will say, with all due respect, I have in the past spoken with some CFOs and others who would stretch that definition, and they would say, well, as long as we've trained the person and approved the site, we're going to book the money. Yeah. And my position was, wait a minute now, anything can happen between the time you train and approve a location and you open a restaurant. You know, if you're going to err on the side of anything, err on the side of being conservative and cautious. Now, when the pendulum swung the other way, the example you give about amortizing, you gave a $45,000 example of someone selling one franchise. And I think that's okay. I got it. I got a $45,000 liability on my books. What if I sell 10 franchises and I got a $450,000 liability?
That's it.
Now we're kind of coming back the other way, and I'll shut up and tell me where are we in the middle, or are we back to, you know, all the way the other side?
Well, that was a great summary. You summed that up.
Well, nicely. That's franchisor speak, yeah. Not accounting speak.
It was good though. You could relate to that. That was good. So in the summer, you're correct. We went back to the old method. So if you did not issue a financial statement when that rule came out in the summer, which was in June, you could follow the old method. Now, if you were a 12/31 year end, yeah. Almost every franchisor filed their FDD by April 30th. So therefore you cannot take advantage of that change that happened in the summer. Let's fast forward to today. In January, the end of January of 21, through the IFA's heavy involvement and the task force they put together, they were able to get some additional concessions for franchisors, which was a very welcome change. And the way the change worked is, using my same example, the $50,000 number, what you can do now is you can look at a bunch of pre-opening obligations. So site selection, full training, you know, all the brand training, not just non-brand training, and a couple other things. And you can say, okay, what is the perceived value of all those services? So I do site selection, I do 200 hours of training, you know, in classroom, before the unit opens, you fly into my location, wherever you're doing all this stuff. What is the perceived value? Not cost, not what it cost you, but what is the perceived value that a franchisee would look at this? You come through that whole calculation. Let's say it's 15,000 and I'm making up a number. You pick up that 15,000 today. So now you got 50 minus 15, 15 comes today on your P&L, and now you're only doing 35 over the 10 years. So better. And using your example, if I sold 10 units, 15 units, you're going to apply that math to all those units that opened. When you delivered that training and you finished that obligation, which is usually opening.
Right. But just to kind of jump in here, and you know, one of the things that I heard you say is it still has to be amortized, but less of it. So again, what entrepreneurs do is they develop workarounds. And as an entrepreneur myself, I'm no longer a franchisor, but I guess the first thing I would do is I would change my franchise agreement from a 10-year term to maybe a 5-year term or 3.5-year term with 3 5-year no fee renewals. Therefore, I get to amortize over 3 years, not 10 years. Now, I know that's cute, okay, and I know it's entrepreneurial for the lack of a better word, but A, could that be done? And B, you know, that kind of just, the whole thing to me is ridiculous. I just want to be on record as saying that. But I'm just curious because it sounds like to me that at some point the governing bodies are saying you can't book that money because you may have to refund it. And if a person's in business for 4 years with your franchise, what claim are they going to have on a franchise fee? I'm not an attorney, and I realize you're not. The whole thing just sounds crazy to me. What's the purpose? What's the thought behind it?
So I'll address that in two points. And you're sharp today. I gotta tell you.
Oh, I'm bitter. I got news for you. I'm bitter today.
We'll do the second piece first. So the second piece is really just trying. They were just trying to align the contract with the revenue. You know, so if we had a 10-year contract, we're gonna align what you paid over a certain amount of time. That was really kind of where they were going with it. To address your first question about shortening the life of the agreement, that question has certainly come up. And from an accounting auditing point of view, you have to really look at, well, what's the true economics of this transaction? So yes, I have a three-year agreement, but I know they're going to renew for the next 5-year blocks. So I have to really then say that it's not a 3-year term. It really is a 15-year or 12-year term, because there's no way in 3 years this person's going to either break even yet or really be pumping. They're going to have to renew. So you have to take the total contract life and add it together.
Right, right. Yeah, and again, you know, my example is extreme just to underscore that there are always workarounds. I see it. I get it. So, you know, obviously franchisors need to have good accountants like you and the other great folks over at Sitch & Cooperman, because we need this type of guidance. What would you be advising franchisors? What should their approach be this year? Because we are in the middle of renewal right now, and I've got a lot of my clients who are in the middle of audit.
Yep.
And, you know, what should we be thinking about? How should we approach it?
Yeah, you certainly want to go through the steps with your auditors, and you want to read what's called the practical expedient, which is the rule that came out at the end of January. And in there, it goes through step by step some of the obligations that you can look at to place value on it. Now, this is an election. You don't have to do it. You can continue to follow the rules that we did last year at the end of 19, because look, a lot of franchisors went through the exercise already at 12/31/19, and they may say, look, I don't have any problems, you know, I have good equity, I don't need to go through this exercise again today. So they need to make that determination if they think this is a beneficial change for them, and is it worth going through the exercise to kind of redo everything you did last year. So it's certainly something to consider. And you can also do this at 12/31/21. You know, you're allowed to do what's called early adoption, which is now, or you can wait till next year.
Right, right. Okay, so there are some options. And again, you know, I underscore the need for having a great financial team behind the franchisor, and Sitch & Cooperman clearly is, you know, the best, one of the best.
Well, thank you for that. There's a lot of information out there. The IFA is full of it. So.
Yeah. Now, you had recently published an article on the topic, which can the listeners find it on the Citroen website?
It is on our website. Yeah. And Franchise Wire is the one who put the article out, and I wrote that for them.
Right. Okay. And again, for those of you who are listening, we're speaking with Michael Iannuzzi from Citrin Cooperman on the revenue recognition rules, ever-changing rules for franchisors. And actually what motivated this podcast is I read the article that Michael published and thought, hey, we need a lot more on this. So is there any closing kind of statement, any kind of closing thoughts you'd like to give us that can, you know, maybe, you know, it's that aha moment for a franchisor who's not working with a good accountant or hasn't really paid attention to this, or perhaps doesn't even recognize how this could negatively impact their balance sheet?
Yeah, if you're an emerging brand and you're really getting up and running at this point and you've sold 15, 20, 30 units, you know, whatever the number is, this is certainly something you want to consider and look at and pay attention to. And also be mindful that the footnotes that go with this, you know, the pages that come after the balance sheet and the P&L are very long. So be very, very careful with them, and don't be overly aggressive either. You know, everybody's going to be looking to throw the kitchen sink into this and trying to pick up, you know, tens and thousands of dollars per franchise. Be realistic about it also. You know, we got to set some realistic expectations. We got to use some judgment here. You know, again, just because you brought five people from the franchisor to do this training, that doesn't mean that's the value. That makes you a good franchisor because you want your franchisees to succeed and you want them to open with pre-sale, good marketing, whatever it is. So that makes you a good franchisor. And if I'm a franchisee comparing two similar businesses, that may sway me to go with you because you're doing all this. That doesn't mean it's value and I can pick up all this revenue. So
I understand. So in short, my emotionally driven statement of make your franchise agreement only be 3 years would underscore that would not be the thing to do. Right. Okay. Well, Michael, as always, you know, thank you. How can people get in touch with you if they want to reach out to you? Is there a website, email address? Again, we'll post it on the webcast, but just tell us how people can reach you.
Sure. So, you know, LinkedIn is a great spot. I post a lot of content on there. Just search for me on LinkedIn. My email is miannuzzi@citrincooperman.com. And, you know, please feel free to reach out. Our firm posts a lot of stuff on this. And my LinkedIn is very active. So anytime updates come out, I'm posting updates on this topic.
Yes, you do. And we do appreciate it. I know I do. And I know a lot of folks that I speak with in the industry appreciate it. Again, thank you very much for being with us again today. And have a great weekend coming up. And I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
All right. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you always having me on here. This is a lot of fun.
Be well.